You're listening to 1001 Album Club, where each episode we discuss a different album from Robert Emery's book, 1001 Albums You Must Hear Before You Die. For this episode, we'll be talking about Metallica. In the room, I have Rob.
Ross!
And on the line, I have Ben.
You know not.
And Kyle.
Sleep with one eye open.
Metallica, commonly known as the Black Album, is a fifth studio album by the American heavy metal band Metallica. It was released on August 12, 1991 by Elektra Records. The producer was James Hetfield, Bob Rock, Lars Ulrich, and the genre is heavy metal. I'm going to read from All Music Review, Steve Huey. After the muddled production and ultra-complicated song structures of Injustice for All, Metallica decided that they had taken the progressive elements of their music as far as they could, and that a simplification and streamlining of their sound was in order. While the assessment made sense from a musical standpoint, it also presented an opportunity to commercialize their music, and Metallica accomplishes both goals. The best songs are more melodic and immediate. The crushing, stripped-down grooves of Inner Sandman, Sad But True, and Wherever I May Roam, sticking to traditional structures and using the same main riffs throughout. The crisp, professional production of Bob Rock adds to their accessibility. The Unforgiven and Nothing Else Matters avoid the slash-and-burn guitar riffs that had always punctuated the band's ballads. The latter is a full-fledged love song complete with strings section, which works much better than might be imagined. The song and riff writing slips here and there, a rare occurrence for Metallica, which some longtime fans interpreted as filler next to a batch of singles calculated for commercial success. The objections were often more to the idea that Metallica was doing anything explicitly commercial, but millions more disagreed. In fact, the band's popularity exploded so much that most of their back catalog found mainstream acceptance in its own right, while other progressively inclined speed metal bands copied the move towards simplification. In retrospect, Metallica is a good but not quite great album, one whose best moments deservedly captured the heavy metal crown, but whose approach also foreshadowed a creative decline. All right, what do we think of Metallica?
This album fucking slaps, man.
Rob, I was really worried you were gonna be like, fuck this album.
No, not in the least bit, but I will agree with the end statement of that review. This is the beginning of the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. This is the commodification and the exploitation of the thrash metal that they helped bring to the forefront. And yeah, like, I mean, shit, guys, five years later, we get fucking Load, and it's everything's
five
done.
Five years. It's not that long.
Still Bob Rock.
During the summer. Yeah, role-playing games with my friends.
Makes sense, yep.
Vampire the Masquerade.
GURPS.
Werewolf. GURPS. Tune.
This was your soundtrack?
We're playing this album over and over, yes.
Yeah, me too, man. Me too.
Werewolf? Oh, where's Werewolf? Look over your back.
What wasn't playing Werewolf had a nice AD&D campaign going, as well as the first of my Magic the Gathering cards.
Okay. I was literally taking role-playing game classes.
That, like, was a choice?
That's an impressive school you went to, Kyle.
No, I was really poor during the summer, and you could take extracurricular classes for free. So I took role-playing game classes. And listened to this over and over.
No, it's great. Even like the non-single tracks, for the most part, like, hit better than I recall them hitting.
Yeah, I will say.
Yeah, track two, Sad Patrol.
Sad Patrol. Kyle, I love that story. I wish this song was called Sad Patrol and it was just about Metallica going around bumming people out.
Yes, track two. I had this album copied onto a tape, as was the fashion at the time for poor children.
Mm-hmm.
And have any of the song titles.
I thought Sad But True
was Sad Patrol.
It sounds exactly like Sad Patrol, and I can't
understand. Thank you guys. I really appreciate you guys.
I can only hear Sad Patrol ever since you told me that.
I was a little child. I heard this. Hey, I'm your life. I'm a bunch of bullshit. No, it's not Sad Patrol.
This going around making people rules, sad.
So. Yeah.
It's
a fucking great riff. Gotcha.
Heavy, good riff.
This record's so interesting. It's so many people thought that Metallica sold out. They spent like $1 million on this record. I remember
it's very
that.
Calculated. You can tell this is such an intentional step in a direction for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like they had a goal to what to do, and then they made this. And from my knowledge, nothing sounded like this before Metallica by Metallica, but after Metallica by Metallica, this is kind of like how post grunge hard rock kind of follows this a bit as a blueprint.
100%.
No, yeah, you're right. It's really interesting because this is during a tough time for like bands that played metal and had long hair had to coexist with the new 1991 regime. And these guys snuck in with really tight songwriting and fucking huge, pristine production. Like, Metallica could have seemed like a fucking joke in 1991. They could have been like Poison or, you know,
mm-hmm.
Motley Crue.
I don't think they could have ever. James Hetfield could have never hit those notes for either one of those bands, but I get what you're saying. But we do have like a Guns N' Roses thing that was happening at the same time, which would have been Use Your Illusions, Volume 1, Volume 2.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, just like if you think about this record. And the production values of User Illusions 1 and 2, like, this is stripped down. Like, this is a very, like, bare bones.
This is not stripped down.
Compared to what Guns N' Roses was doing at the same time, it is. Which is why
User Illusion, yeah.
No one was following the Guns N' Roses template.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
I think Motley Crue did, like, a 1995. Whoops.
Metallica is actually following the Motley Crue template a little bit here by hiring Bob Rock.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Did Bob Rock do Dr. Feelgood?
Yeah, he did. Yes, Dr. Feelgood.
Okay. And, mm-hmm. and also Subterraneans was his first record.
This record is a watershed. I mean, how are you going to get kids into metal? This sounds so huge and so amazing.
No one had ever asked that question before.
Like, I remember getting into this record.
How are you going to get kids in the metal?
You go back
it's called an older brother who smokes weed in a van. That's how you get kids in metal.
Man.
I'm the old dude. Listen to soundtracks.
I'm that brother.
Someone else's older brother, Ben. Meet more older brothers with vans and pot.
It's too late. It's too late now.
I listened to this record. I went back, you know, and Justice for All. What's up? You know.
Yeah, what's up? Where's this bass?
Yeah, where'd that bass go?
Where'd that bass go?
I was very happy.
The bass came back for this record.
Here, yeah, sure more did. Of Jason.
Yeah,
this album's like 100 feet tall.
It is. I think that is the real. That's what does it for this album is the production. I mean, it just
yeah,
for sure,
huge, 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 huge production, and Metallica was just the band to do it at the time.
Rob, you were an old school Metallica fan. Did you think this was a sellout record?
When I was 11 years old, no.
Right.
I can
but
honestly
you know what I'm
say,
saying? Like, a lot of people are like...
When I was 11 years old, this was a very important record to me. It was one of the first records I've ever heard by Metallica. To unshit on your poo-poo party here, Kyle, my wife, she likes 3 Metallica records.
Okay. Which ones?
Load, Reload.
No, no. It's
Garage Inc.
It's Kill 'Em All, Ride the Lightning... Master of Puppets. That's where she lists.
That's where I'm at.
Todd, our esteemed friend who will eventually be on the podcast, he likes 4,
mm-hmm.
which is Kill 'Em All, Ride the Lightning, Master of Puppets,
Justice and Justice for All.
Then, and Todd's a good 9 years older than us.
Mm-hmm.
And then comes me, I like 5 of the records, and this is the one. And the reason, the difference between me and Todd, Sheila is just a Cliff Burton. Like this, they,
oh, of
they,
course,
they,
Cliff Burton.
Yes, yeah, they shit the bed after Cliff died.
Yeah,
Todd was. He was hanging out with a bunch of skater kids and, like, mm-hmm. you know, he'd see the shirts, like, oh, yep. man, I'm awesome. Just fucking, yeah, man, yeah, whatever. And, like, got into Metallica off of, like, just skater culture and was like, all these fucking, like, weird-ass time changes, that's rad. And then when the Black Album came out, like, he had his mom drive him, like, to the record yeah. store. He's like, I need to get this right now.
Yep.
Yeah, respect.
And put it on. It's like, specifically, Don't Tread on Me is the song. He was like, this is fucking bullshit. Like, mm-hmm. because it is a complete turnaround of every anti-war statement that Metallica had made, like with the four records pre. And Birch and I had both watched a year and a half in the life of Metallica, the documentary of the making of the Black Album, and in the background is just the fucking like war.
Mm-hmm.
It's or the Gulf War. And so like
yeah
so his Hetfield's
hey, Saddam can't touch this.
Exactly. Hetfield's writing of Don't Tread on Me was what Todd and a lot of people was just figured as kind of a like kind of like the proud to be an American yep. stand up mm-hmm. boo, next to you shit
next to yep. you thank you
and yeah that lost him at least the respect of one 19-year-old man.
mm-hmm.
I get it, but as an 11-year-old boy, this shit was my jam.
I just this week, speaking of Don't Tread on Me, I just this week made the connection of the song title Don't Tread on Me and then the snake on the cover. The Don't Tread on Me snake.
Yes.
Don't step on snake.
Please, no steppy.
Yeah, no, but I mean, that covers a Spinal Tap reference, right?
100%.
Wait, is it intentionally a Spinal Tap reference?
It has to be.
They acknowledge. Please tell me
they're in on the joke.
Yes, okay. They yeah. know. Mm-hmm.
It's not yeah. like an after they did fact. It on purpose. Oh, yeah, we did it on purpose.
I mean, this is only like 5 or 6 years after the movie came out. You the
movie
know.
Was like 81. This is like 10 years.
In the documentary.
Spinal Tap came out in 1984.
Trust me, they say Spinal Tap in the documentary. Yeah. I can confirm that they know exactly what they're doing.
Thank you, Birch.
You're welcome.
Yeah, the horn does come from the Good, the Bad, the Good, the Bad, and the Ugly soundtrack.
Yeah. I hear that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. the song is specifically talking about the Clint Eastwood film, The Unforgiven.
Fantastic film, by the way.
To this day, they continue to do The Ecstasy of Gold as their intro yep. music. And so I thought
just
it was
like the Ramones did.
Is that the Good, the Bad, and the Ugly theme title? Ecstasy of Gold.
Ecstasy of Gold is it's where Tuco is running around the cemetery at the end of the Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
So it's not the I.
No, it's wah 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 wah.
Keep going.
Ennio would be so proud.
He would.
Oh, R.I.P.
Fun story. My parents are going on a trip to Italia, and they're going to be stopping out in Barcelona and making their way to that gravesite
mm-hmm.
because my dad really wants to see it before he dies.
Okay.
And then heading their way.
Five singles from this album: Inner Sandman, The Unforgiven, Nothing Else Matters, Wherever I May Roam, and Sad Patrol. Apparently,
Sad Patrol.
Sad Patrol.
They continue to like laugh at Bob Rock because he was like, yeah, he was campaigning against Enter Sandman as being the lead single,
and then they sold like come on,
16 million albums, and they're like, really? Is that really? Oh, you didn't want Enter Sandman as a single, huh? Is that what you're saying, Bob Rock? Cool.
There was a Metallica fan
single though. It was one that they never did.
Is it the thing that should not be?
No. I think it might have been too.
Everyone's like, that song sucks. He's like, wait a minute.
There was a Metallica fan petition to keep Bob Rock away from future Metallica recordings. I think that was after Stanger.
Can you say the real title?
Saint Anger?
Yes.
Saint Stanger?
Oh, Saint Anger.
Not everybody's as cool as
push
as
it
you
up.
Guys.
Push it up.
What, Stanger? Or should know it by its proper name.
Lulu.
Weird fist.
Here's how deep my not really a metalhead thread runs all the way back into childhood. I was aware of, I didn't own Metallica in 91, but I had friends. I'd heard the stuff and I thought it was fine. But the very first Metallica song that I thought, like, okay, now that's cool.
Yeah.
Was a Metallica song called Whiskey in the Jar. That I later realized, no, I wasn't. It's not that I was into new Metallica.
In the jar. It wasn't
that I was into new Metallica. It was just like I was a Thin Lizzy fan already, but I didn't know it yet.
Yeah, Pulp got me into that song, so I get it.
Turns out I'm such a big Thin Lizzy fan that even when played through a Metallica filter, I was like, ooh, that's the one. That's the song right there.
My favorite was, or the one that got me into it was Fight Fire with Fire.
Hell yeah.
First song. Ride the Lightning. Ride the Lightning is still
Ride the Lightning.
So good.
It's one of Battery, right?
No, that's Master of Puppets.
God damn it.
Yeah, but it has For Whom the Bell Tolls, Fade to Black. I mean, Creeping Death. It's I'm not into this era of Metallica. I re-listened to it this week and I was like, I don't know if I really like this album anymore. Like,
I remember talking to Trey and he made a straight dividing line between whenever Hetfield would end every single line with, hey,
yeah. 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 It works when you're doing a thrash, but when you're doing slow ballads and this kind of stuff.
Label me. Label you.
He'll fit him in when he can.
Yeah. I don't know.
I still think Kirk Hammett's solo work on this is pretty fucking impeccable. And as far as riff rock is concerned, they got some good chunky riffs, man.
It's true.
They have some good chunky riffs.
Yeah.
Metal or is this hard rock? Not specifically the track Unforgiven, but I mean the album Metallica by Metallica.
It's still metal. This is metal. But a lot of metalheads would fight me over saying that.
I mean, I
might get jumped at Magbar, guys.
But you know what's weird? And I could be way off base saying this because, again, I'm not a metalhead. Previous to Metallica by Metallica, there was stuff, there's been stuff that's been considered metal. Like albums by Black Sabbath, I don't want to say Blue Cheer, that stuff had never been questioned really whether or not like that's like metal stuff. But then when a band that's a thrash band takes a step, I don't want to say takes a step back, but takes a step outside of thrash to into that, then metalheads are saying that, oh no, this isn't metal. This is hard rock. Does it take a metal band taking a step away from metal to make that distinction? Because before a metal band played this music that sounded like this kind of was grandfathered in as metal. But now a thrash band is playing the style of music and it's no longer metal because it's not metal relative to what they were doing.
Yeah, no, I hear what you're saying, but I still think that this is thusly in the heavy metal genre. I mean, even Motley Crue is considered heavy metal.
Yeah.
I mean, Twisted Sister, things like that are considered heavy metal. So you're not going to get outside of that heavy metal, I think, genre, especially for Metallica. Their chord structures, the way they're presenting it, especially with something like Sad But True, Through the Never is straight up like, you know, like heavy metal song.
Through the Never is a banger.
I think I wrote Holier Than Thou. I also made a note that like, this sounds like metal.
Exactly. And that's, but people will argue, if you were to say this is a thrash album, everyone would be like, no, not even close.
And it's not.
It's Dave Mustaine the most angry for you saying that?
I think that's the dividing line. And that's where people might talk to you about, the dividing line of Metallica is like, they were thrash. They're no longer thrash. They're heavy
metal.
But
they're still metal.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
You can make an argument. I mean, how metal are you and whatever. But, I mean, those solos, the you know, you can't, you're not going to deny that this is firmly, like, planted in heavy metal.
Yeah.
The solos, do you remember, like, around, I think it was, like, around probably Load, like, mid-90s, when they changed their band logo to all lowercase letters, like the Weezer logo?
Yeah, yeah. Once the further Alternica? They get away, they go to, yeah, they go into more like this, I don't know, if alternative metal, like hard rock. It got a little, they didn't know exactly what they wanted to do.
Well, I mean, we've got Wherever I May Roam in our cans right
now. I like Wherever I May Roam. This was a standout track for me. I like the Eastern mode of the riff. Reminds me a bit of Turkish Song of the Damned in like the
little George Harrison.
Yeah.
Yeah. Remind me of two of the Megadeth album, mm-hmm. where they had a lot of Eastern modes, yeah, Eastern scales.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the Leonard Bernstein intro to Don't Tread on Me was kind of hilarious.
Yes.
Yeah, it was really funny.
You know what's really fucking metal? West Side Story.
Yeah, bro.
I guess it is about gang fights, but it's also about Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah, I would have. This deserves its place in the book, simply because it
sold 16 billion copies. Yeah. It was on the Billboard 200 for 488 weeks.
Only taking over, like they've come in second versus Dark Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon as the
how many millions?
16 million.
Millions of children did this turn into.
16 millions is of.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
No, it definitely. I definitely carved Metallica in my leg.
You're one of them.
Seventh grade with a knife at one point.
Rob, you told me that when this album came out, you're playing Dungeons and Dragons and you played a troll named Kirk Hammett.
I never said that, but
you told me all of this.
None of that is real. But no, we this record.
You're a bard named Kirk Hammett.
As far as D&D campaigns that lasted like 12 hours over the course of a summertime when we had summers off as children. This record was mixed in with other Metallica records and mm-hmm. the Empire Strikes Back soundtrack. Okay. So, yeah. No. It all worked out.
Can't go wrong with some John Williams.
A lot of Mountain Dew.
Iron Maiden vocalist Bruce Dickinson said that Metallica should be given huge credit for, quote, grabbing the opportunity when it came up, taking the risk and deservingly reaping the enormous rewards, and that their achievement with the album cannot be underestimated. He shared his thoughts on it as well. It's one of those seminal albums that just gets it right. It's extremely well produced and every note on the album is totally under control. I admire how they did it and what they did with the songs, and it was very effective. It undoubtedly did help push metal into the mainstream.
He's not wrong.
That's very true.
Yeah, man, that's a good perspective from Bruce Dickinson, and he's absolutely right.
This and Guns N' Roses and I don't know, John Bon Jovi.
I think when people talk about this album and they harp upon, it's not metal enough, it's blah, blah, blah. I think it's something that metal had this subculture of being underground. And once Metallica had this album, had enormous success, it was in every record store. Everybody was playing it. Absolutely. It was on the radio. Yeah. I think something was lost to those people who had their...
For everybody who planted a flag on this fucking band.
Exactly.
100%.
Yeah, and they were following this band, and once this band was hugely successful by what they wanted to do, then it became something else.
I agree.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
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 When they should have just been saying, "I don't like this like this record."
Well, this doesn't work for me.
It's not.
Well, I hate to spoil it for them, but they're not going to like the next few either.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're not going
to
like
what the Sepultura band's up to.
And it comes exactly.
Let's go listen to Chaos AD.
Yeah.
I will say, you know, another band that followed their template was Anthrax, was a thrash band.
100%.
One of the big four. And then they came out in 1993 with Sound of White Noise.
Sound of White Noise, yep.
Which Absolutely. It's a very good record, and it followed this template, though. It had huge sound. It was slightly slowed down, and it, you know, it had a different type of a music. Slayer did not do that.
No.
Neither did Megadeth.
No, they did not.
Seriously, though, if Don't Tread on Me didn't have these stupid fucking lyrics, this song is great. It is a fun... It's a good riff.
Is this... this riff sounds... I'm not the most knowledgeable, admittedly. Does this sound like a Pantera riff to you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or, sorry, Pantera sounds like this riff.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, okay. Okay. That's what I was hearing when I was listening to it.
Inner Sandman, I learned, was about SIDS.
Yeah. Also, Inner Sandman was one of the longest times he just had, like, lyrics for a thing for forever.
Inner Sandman's about SIDS? That's sad.
Yeah.
Brutal, dude.
They actually had to, they changed it a bit because they thought it was, like, a little...
Morbid?
Morbid. There you go.
One would say that, yes. And rightfully so.
That's why they changed the video. But of course, the video got played hourly. I mean, all the time.
That video constantly. And fucking Losing My Religion.
Mm-hmm.
Forever mm-hmm. back to back.
I guess I recently figured out what SIDS was. It's the your brain's, most people, their brain's got a reflex, like when they stop breathing or something in the middle of the night to wake them up. To
sudden infant death syndrome.
That's yeah, the one, Kyle.
But I guess some humans don't have that reflex or something, and that I think that's what SIDS is. But I was doing some reading about it when I had my own sleeping infant last year.
God, Through the Never, such a good riff.
Yeah, Through the Never,
such a good fucking riff.
It's one of my favorite like songs on this album, I would say.
Yeah, for sure.
It is a ripper. Yeah.
The band was perfectionists, obviously, in the studio. They insisted the record have as many takes as needed, get the sound they wanted. The album was remixed 3 times, cost $1 million to...
Yeah.
Well, geez. No, they made that back.
So $16 million.
I mean, at that point in time, that must have been the most expensive.
$20 American dollars per... What? Yeah, yeah. Do you think that was worth $1 million?
Yeah, they made it back.
I kept on reading about how much of a bad time Metallica was having with Bob Rock and how much of a bad time Bob Rock was having with Metallica. It didn't sound like the beginning of a 10-year relationship.
It was tumultuous. Watching the documentary, I actually really admire Metallica. I was thinking about this today, that they're willing to put themselves out to be like, well, this is just what we are. Like, we can be assholes, and they put it on film.
Yep.
It's not like they try to hide it like other artists might, or, you know, their shenanigans and their tomfool, all the things where they have disagreements in the studio gets captured on film, and they're very upfront and real about that, which I respect that, even though it makes them look like assholes.
Oh, total fucking dicks.
Yeah, it at least comes across. And yeah, watching that documentary, there's Bob is just like, we're just doing it wrong. Like, or he'll like tell Kirk, like, you didn't do your homework, like, you're not ready to do this solo. You know, he's just very plain to their face and being like, you guys are like not doing this correctly, or your ideas are not good.
No,
or,
Lars, yeah. You fucking piece of shit.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
yeah.
If we don't have the guitars here, there's nothing there. So you're going, John, John, and you want, John, John. No, we need something to fill in the spaces, you fucking prick.
Yeah.
Like, and just, yeah, like, doing the thing that he needs to do for, and it's weird that they even had, like, the, like, but this is the way that I want it.
Yeah.
Like, idea, but, I mean, again, they were all just kind of millionaires at that point,
yeah.
So.
Yeah. They had, it's good to have people with, you know, different opinions, and they need to be happy with it in the end, for sure.
I also found out that this record was the first one that James wasn't playing basically all of the parts and the solos. This is the first one that Kirk Hammett was like, I get to do my thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why was Kirk Hammett not playing solos on previous albums? He's an accomplished guitarist, is he not?
There is a... And he may have played some of those solos on... justice. But yeah, you know, he's a very accomplished soloist and guitarist, but the way that James Hetfield and Lars worked, they were pretty fucking like, this is the way things are.
They're like peas and carrots.
Yeah. But for this one, Bob Rock actually like encouraged Kurt Hammett to do things over and over and over and over and over ad nauseum until he got it, which I will say that the documentary actually captured really well.
Yeah.
Didn't am I misremembering? Didn't Bob Rock also convince him to, if not record live, record in the same room?
Yes.
At the same, like, because they were always just like isolated.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. All the same room.
Yeah. He said, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to, you know, be in the same room. I also loved The Thing That Should Not Be was written and performed in standard detuning for guitar. The song's demo was originally in the key of E. Producer Bob Rock recalled to musicradar.com, quote, "We were in pre-production, which was uncomfortable because no way had ever made them go through their songs in such a deliberate way before. And six songs in Sad But True came along. Suddenly I realized that every song, including this one, was in the key of E. I brought this to the band's attention and they said, well, isn't E the lowest note? So I told them that on Motley Crue's Dr. Feelgood, which I produced, Metallica loved, the band had tuned down to D. Metallica then tuned down to D, and that's when the riff really became huge. It was this force that you just couldn't stop no matter what.
That can't be true.
That can't be true, right?
No, because fucking Ride the Lightning, like, when they went and did that, like, old boy who was recording them was like, no, we're going to, unless the difference is, like, they tuned up and then the tape was slowed.
I think that's just Bob Rock being silly. But I really want to think about Metallica being like, isn't E the lowest that we can possibly go on?
23 is the lowest number, or the highest number.
Yeah. Absolutely none lower.
But yeah, I think Bob Rock kind of put them, I think he kind of put them in their place, to tell you the truth.
Totally, dude. And they were not rich enough pricks to like buck his like,
right.
They respected what he was trying to do.
Yeah. And I think they worked with him.
They
hired afterward.
Him. They picked him. Yeah.
I think they hired him afterwards because it sold 16 million copies. And once you do that, I mean, what else are you going to do? It's,
I don't know, fucking find retire it, and you have stop a, doing, God, do you remember when Load came out? Do you remember when it first hit your ears and you were so
yeah,
sad?
Yeah, it was 20 plus years ago, Rum.
I actually just now stumbled upon
the cover
Load.
Was like jizz and shit. Come on, man. We all remember
blood.
Load.
It was jizz and blood.
Yeah, and then Reload's jizz and piss. Or blood and piss.
Give me fuel, give me fire, give me that which I desire.
Ooh. It was so bad. Like
I
a
just
total
pulled
betrayal,
up a...
but like yeah, it, from 19.
Or are you unforgiven too?
Sure, from 1991 to 1996, like the music that filled in the gaps for my little metalhead ways were that just hit in the worst possible like spot, and there might be an okay track on it, but dude, I will never revisit it. It's bad. Universe, much too big to see. Time and space, never ending. Disturbing thoughts, questions pending. Limitation of human understanding. Too quick to criticize. Obligation to survive. We are gonna be alive. Almost all the singles were accompanied by music videos. Wayne Isham directed Inner Sandman, promotional film that won MTV Music Awards for Best Rock Video at the 1992 MTV Music Video Awards. So, yeah, I watched some of the videos, rewatched them, I guess I should say. They're okay. Unforgiven's pretty cool.
Yeah, Unforgiven's good. Inner Sandman is very striking, the way it has those sort of strobe effects.
Yep.
It was very effective, for sure, especially when you're, you know, watching late night Hairbangers Ball and things like that.
Man, I want to hate Of Wolf and Man so much, and I want to hate the fact that there are parts of this where James Hetfield pretends he's becoming a werewolf. Yeah, yeah. Like, oh god, guys, it's so dumb.
You and Bob Rock. Bob Rock was like, what the fuck are you
what
doing?
What are you doing?
Like, he's like, werewolves, man!
Nah, man, you ever seen American Werewolf in London?
I have.
But the riff is so much better than what he's saying. Ah, Shapeshift!
Yeah, I can't abide by this song.
That's bad.
That's no good.
And the one of the reasons why I like it so much is because James Swihart still says wolf is woof.
Yeah. I did think the God That Failed was really interesting about his, it's about his mother who was a Christian Science, or had Christian Science beliefs, in which she would not seek medical treatment. And died of cancer pretty shortly thereafter.
Yeah.
And so it's about, you know, her believing in God and essentially James saying, well, you know, that God failed. If you can't, like, recognize to take medicine for to treat illness. Yeah, it's wild. I never had that perspective before, but
no, I didn't know that story.
I don't know. Yeah, for as much shit as I like give this album, there are some interesting aspects to it for sure. I still think that it does lose me a bit. Of Wolf and Man, My Friend Misery, Struggle. Although I kind of like My Friend Misery, Struggle Within, and So What. Like, it kind of just does it lose you at the end?
No, honestly. Okay. Lyrically, yes.
Okay.
Riff wise, no. Mm. I know we're still
I feel the change.
We're on the. I would love if someone cut up the Jack Nicholson James Spader Wolf movie.
Okay.
To A Wolf and Man.
Mm-hmm.
I would love that music video. Of Wolf.
What does he say? Back to the
meaning.
Oh, back to the meaning.
Okay. Of Wolf and Man.
Okay.
Shapeshift, move swift.
Back to the meaning.
What, 10 beats per minute faster?
I don't think that's what's not doing it for me.
It's not the speed?
No. I think they have.
Is it a laziness of the riff itself?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think
that
they have.
Makes sense.
They have a problem on this album with a bit of sort of a laziness of riff. And I'm trying to get I get to the place sometimes of being like, well, it's like the AC/DC effect where it's like, well, there's space. It's space to breathe. But at the same time, their formula doesn't always work.
Okay. I like Jugga-Dugga as a riff, though.
Mm-hmm.
It does kind of foreshadow what they're going to be doing with Load. Yeah, no, you're right.
I think for this, I would have just rather have a couple like thrash songs.
Oh, totally.
I think a couple thrash songs would have done this album good, I think.
Yeah. They're going for what will become of those, the Pantera, the sort of like riff rock. Slow groove metal, essentially.
For sure.
That Tool, you know, Tool does that very well. But of course, when they do it, they're doing it in 11. Time signatures. Yeah, in 11 or whatever. So I think that would have been very welcome of having something that is a little more dynamic and a little different. I don't hate
this
it.
This album drops off at the end for me a little bit.
Yeah.
Sure.
I am happy, though, that they let Jason have a songwriting credit, My Friend of Misery, you know.
He has two in the entirety of their catalog.
Yeah. What's
it, My Friend Misery and Blackened?
Mm-hmm.
It was also wonderful in that documentary seeing him happy.
Like, yeah.
I'm in my favorite band, and they're listening to me.
Yeah.
I get to write stuff.
Yeah, I thought that was really wonderful, too. It really seemed like he was in a good place. he recognizes the band's dynamic and their bullshit, and he's just like, I'm fine in my own world. Yep. Like, you guys can fuck off and do whatever you want to do. I like playing bass and I like being in this band. So until you say otherwise, like, I'm just going to do my own thing, play bass, and you guys can do all the arguing and whatever you want to do.
Yeah. And even when he was like, they were like, I don't like what you're playing. He's like, okay, well, does this work?
Yeah. I mean, that's a
he didn't take criticism like a giant baby.
Nope.
He was just like, oh, well, nope. maybe this one.
Yeah. Let's wrap this up. What do you think of this album, though?
Positive, I guess, for me. Yeah, sure. Positive.
I fucking love this record. It's a gateway album. I was playing GURPS and Werewolf, and I heard this record, and I became a man.
What do you think?
I'm a positive. I think it does a real disservice to the future of heavy metal.
What?
But I think that because it was the first one to come out,
I don't think it does a disservice.
But I think what commercial heavy metal did with this record is a disservice to metal.
Okay, yeah.
Convoluted way of saying that. I think this is not nearly as good as the last record they did, and nowhere near as good as the first three records they did.
Yeah.
But ultimately, I would say I'm a positive on the Black album, and I don't know why we continue with Metallica after this.
Yeah.
And I don't think that adding a symphonic orchestra necessarily deserves to be in the book. But you know what? We'll cross that bridge when we come.
Sure. Yeah. I feel of two minds. If I just say neutral, I feel like that's silly, because this was one of those albums that came out and was like defining, you know, like a very, you know, I've heard this album many, many times just from being around it, you know, like having it played, things like that. But at the same time, it feels weird to go totally positive, because I just don't know. I don't put it on. This is the first time I've put it on in like years and years. And every single time I would have thought of a Metallica album, it's literally the first three albums.
You're a three boy.
Yeah, I kind of am. I can get in there a little bit with Injustice, just for the pure fact that there's some, like, I like prog. I like some like more interesting, you know, technical things. But I like, the crazy thing is I really do. I think the production fools me a bit, and that's why I can get into this album. I'll probably go positive just for that alone, because when you hear those drums come in to like an amazing sound system, there's nothing like it, you know?
Those lazy ass drums.
Yeah, exactly. Those silly drums that they literally went through and picked out every single time it sounded good on the snare.
Yep.
And that's like studio magic, but at the same time, it also doesn't matter. I guess it doesn't. You know, when you're at a stadium and someone's, you know, like when this is playing, there's something about it for sure. So I don't know. I have mixed feelings about it, though. Is even though I'd go positive, I'd still be like, yeah,
but yeah.
So I would just much rather have a lot of the other music that were, I mean, I'd rather have Chaos AD. I'd rather have, you know, like, to tell you the truth, I might prefer like Sound of White Noise. I don't know. I haven't listened to it recently, but you know, there's a couple albums around this time but as far as the book's concerned, I mean, 16 million copies,
can't
influential, like
literally cannot be fucked with.
Yeah. Broke the mold, did everything it was supposed to do, brought metal into the mainstream. Radio play forever for Metallica.
100%. Yeah.
You know. All right, next time we'll be talking about Pavement, Slanted, and Enchanted. Thanks, y'all. Open mind for a different view.
else matters.